one day by a glancing dart planted by Daisy Bell. Whether she loves me or loves me not, sometimes it's hard to tell. Yet I am longing to share the lot of beautiful Daisy Bell. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage, I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet on the seat of a bicycle built for two. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage, I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet on the seat of a bicycle built for two. I will stand by you in wheel or bull, Daisy, Daisy. You'll be the bell which I'll ring, you know, sweet little Daisy Bell. You'll take the lead in each trip we take, then if I don't do well, I will permit you to use the brake, my beautiful Daisy Bell. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I can't afford a carriage, but you look sweet on the seat of a bicycle built for two.
Very nice start to the program, Gerald Adams and the Variety Singers and Daisy Bell, and a very good morning to you. Welcome to, my goodness, the first Wednesday morning of May. Can you believe it? I really can't. Another couple of weeks, we'll be halfway through the year already. I'm not ready for it. I really am not. Anyway, welcome to the program. Lots of good music between now and 2 o'clock or so. And of course, we have comedy for you in about 90 minutes time. We've also got Doris Day, and we've got a nice Beagle's Big Three coming up in about 25 minutes time. And we have a short story for you as well, which is a love story. All of that, plus some great music as well, from people like the Ames Brothers.
Melody d'amour, take this song to my lover. Shoo, shoo, little bird, go and find my love. Melody d'amour, serenade at her window, shoo, shoo, little bird, sing my song of love. Oh, tell her I will wait,
I will wait,
if she names a day,
names a date.
Tell her that I care,
how I care,
more than I can bear,
I can bear.
For when we are apart, how it hurts my heart. So fly, oh, fly away, and say and pray this lover's melody,
oh, will bring her back to me.
Melody d'amour, take this song to my lover. Shoo, shoo, little bird, go and find my love. Melody d'amour, serenade at her window. Shoo, shoo, little bird, tell her of my love.
Thank you. return.
Her return.
Say I miss her so, more than she could know.
She could know. For when we are apart, how it hurts my heart. So fly away, and say that I hope and pray this lover's melody
will bring her back to me. Melody d'amour, serenade at her window, shoo shoo little bird,
tell
Brothers and Melody or Mélodie d'amour. And speaking a bit French, because my niece, she's been in Paris for a few days, and I spoke to her sur le téléphone yesterday, and I developed a French accent. It's as simple as that. No, it's stupid, right? We've got Bing Crosby coming up in a couple of minutes' time, but to take us there, Eileen Barton and Jimmy Wakely.
You go that way, I'll go.
When a fella's bringing a lady to a dance, wears a plaid shirt and his best blue pants, swings to the fiddle, steps to the beat, gotta be careful where he puts his feet.
You step this way, she steps that way, no time to giggle, no time to chat away, heads in a tizzy, heart steady pat, that away, this way, this way, that.
When a fella's courting, wants to win a prize, looks at your figure, looks into your eyes, keep him a-guessing, put him on a spot, that's when the parson ties the knot.
You do it that way, he does it this way, gotta take care when you give one kiss away. Nights full of worry, days full of bliss, this way, that away, that away, this.
When a feller's married, his mind ain't his own. Never was a woman who could let her man alone. Tells him what to do, tells him what to say, tells him he better let her have her way.
You say this away, she says that away. Wipe your dirty shoes off, hang your old hat away, put out the dog, bring in the cat, that away, this away, this away, that.
Love is a problem, that's for sure. There ain't no tonic that'll bring a cure. Now that we're married, man and wife, loving my honey the rest of my life.
You love go is a that problem, away, that's I'll for sure. There don't ain't no tonic that'll bring a cure. Now that we're married, sure, man and wife, loving my honey away, the rest of my life.
You go that way, I'll go this way. Don't stay long, cause we don't want to miss a day. Just to be sure, seal it with a kiss. This way, that way, that way, this.
Beautiful stuff. Eileen Barton and Jimmy Wakely with This Away, That Away from 1955. Yeah, you remember that a day. So, how's your week been? Well, my week has been actually pretty quiet, which is good after the tearing around the United Kingdom as I had been doing for a week before. So just a nice quiet week, just doing my radio shows, spending time with you, and ordering food on the internet. And that was actually pretty much it, and that's perfectly fine for me. Also, did go out, Thursday or Friday, to look at hotels around the area, because I've got family coming over in August, lots of them, so we need to put them up in hotels. That was rather fun. But apart from that, quiet week, which is really what I needed. Sunday night we saw the last of the present series of Call the Midwife. I do like that program. I know I mention it most weeks, but it's just really good television. At least that's what I find it to be. And I just love everybody in it. And I look forward to the next series, which probably now won't be until Christmas for us. But at least it gives us something to look forward to. All right, 10 minutes into the program, and this is where we have a couple of songs from Bing Crosby, Songs Interruption, and to start it, all I have to do is say, Bing, sing.
From the great Atlantic Ocean to the wide Pacific shore, From the queen of the flowing mountains to the South Bells by the shore. She's mighty tall and handsome and known quite well by all. She's a combination on the Wabash Cannonball. She come down from Birmingham one cold December day. As she rode into the station, you could hear the people say, there's a gal from Tennessee, oh, long and she's tall. She come down from Birmingham on the Wabash Cannonball. Eastern states are dandy, so the people always say, from New York and St. Louis and Chicago by the way, from the hills of Minnesota where the rippling waters flow, no changes can be taken on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle and the rumble and the roar as she glides along the woodlands, through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engine, hear that lonesome hobo squall, traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball. Yeah, she's going up the grade now. Gonna be in the roundhouse soon, yeah. They say don't go on Wolverton Mountain if you're looking for a wife, 'cause Clifton Clowers has a pretty young daughter and he's mighty handy with a gun and a knife. Her tender lips are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tell Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should wander there, all of my dreams are on Wolverton Mountain. I want his daughter for my wife. I'll take my chances and climb that mountain, though Clifton Clowers might take my life. Her tender lips,
her tender lips
are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tempt Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should wander there. I'm going up on Wolverton Mountain. It's too lonesome down here below. It's just not right to hide his daughter from the one who loves her so. Her tender lips,
her tender
lips, are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tell Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should wander there. I don't care about Clifton Clowers, I'm gonna climb up on his mountain. I'm gonna take the girl I love. I don't care about Clifton Clowers, I'm gonna climb up on that mountain, and I'll get the girl I love. I don't care about Clifton. Now blue ain't the word for the way that I feel. And a storm's brewing in this heart of mine. This is no crazy dream, I know that it's real. You're someone else's love, now you're not mine. Crazy arms that reach to hold somebody new, but my yearning heart keeps saying you're not mine. My troubled mind knows soon to another you'll be wed, and that's why I'm lonely all the time. Oh, please take the treasured dreams I've had for you and me, and take all the love I thought was mine. Someday my crazy arms will hold someone new, but now I'm so lonely all the time. Crazy arms that reach to hold somebody new, but my yearning heart keeps saying you're not mine. My troubled mind knows soon to another you'll be wed, and that's why I'm lonely all the time.
Nice to a little bit more up to date Bing Crosby this week than we usually do. It was from an album called Bing Sings the Great Country Hits, and we heard there first of all Wabash Cannonball, and then in the middle we had the Great Wolverton Mountain, and then Crazy Arms. And we'll have some more songs from Bing Crosby around about the same time next week.
Angel Radio, old fashioned quality. Your constant companion.
I want to say a very good morning now to Holger over there in Germany, and he's very quiet this week, is Holger. He says, here you go, no further comment needed. You know what? He's right.
Mama, ich rufe dich an, oh Mama, ich bin allein, so ganz allein, ich will nicht einsam sein und wünsche mir, dass ich so wie früher wär. Oh Mama, ich nach Haus zu der Mama, ich käm sofort, am besten heut, wer liebt mich so wie du, nur bei dir find ich Ruhe immer zu, Mama, die sorglose Zeit. Sie liegt ja so weit, viel ist geschehen zwischen gestern und heut, was in unseren Sternen steht, wir wissen es nie, wohin das Schicksal sich dreht. Oh Mama, ich dank dir heiß, liebe Mama, so manche Nacht hast du mich bewacht und du hast mich nur wegen mir mal an dich selbst gedacht. Oh Mama, ich bin ja noch jung, liebe Mama. Doch einst kam der Tag, wo ich dir sag, ich bin ein großer Mann. Komm her in mein Haus und ruhe dich aus. Du hast schon genug getan.
Well, that was Roy Orbison, and the song was called Mama. I think it was from around about 1962, something like that, no doubt. Holger will correct me. One of the many singers that decided that recording their songs in German was actually a good thing. The Beatles did it, of course. Roy Orbison did it. Nat King Cole did it with his L-O-V-E. There were lots of German recordings of British songs, which I find interesting because it was only, I think, Germany that really did that. I mean, you didn't really hear many UK songs sung in Portuguese or Spanish or Greek or anything like that. But very nice indeed. Mama from Roy Orbison. My thanks to Holger for that. Really did like that. And we'll have another song from Holger's house around about the same time next week. Holger, thank you. Time to go up the stairs to Bedfordshire.
Pine tree, pine over me. Now that my love is gone, pine tree, you seem to be the only one pining for me.
Tell black-eyed Susans I've tears in my eyes. Tell all the mountains to echo my sighs. Please tell my darling
from your treetop, your treetop so high. Talk to my darling, tell her how I cry. Say that I pray that she'll come back someday, and that I still love her while she's far away. Oh, pine tree, pine over me, now that my love is gone. Pine tree, you seem to be the only one pining for me.
Please call from your treetop, your treetop so high. Talk to my darling,
just so many people in that song. It's unbelievable. There was Eileen Barton and Johnny Desmond. There were McGuire sisters were thrown in there as well, and a wonderful conductor as well, and that was Dick Jacobs, Pine Tree, Pine Over Me, from 1954. Do you know what types of ice cream pine trees like? Pine cones.
On your old Valve Wireless and your new digital radio, and computers, laptops, worktops, iPads, earpads, knee pads, mobile phones, headphones, saxophones, Wi-Fi radios, hi-fi radios, high-priced radios, low-priced radios. The fabulous sound of Angel Radio.
Anybody other than Glenn Miller and his orchestra with the vocalizations there coming from Ray Eberly, and of course When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano. Listening to Big Lee at Night, which is actually in the morning, just to confuse things. And of course where I am it's Tuesday, and where you are it's Wednesday, but you know what, somehow it all works out. I think we can probably fit in one more song before we get into Beagle's Big Three. So here's Kay Kaiser and his orchestra from 1939.
Way back in 1939 A.D. Babbitt and Juliet Sims.
Oh, what the boyfriend I felt for thee.
way back in 1939,
thy lips made history sweet unto me. Way back in 1939 AD, nights were in flower, you may be sure.
Not nights in arbor,
nights of sweet amour.
Oh, Harry, oh, canst thou remember long, long ago?
Aye, Jeanette, tis true, tis true. I'd serenade thee with my portable radio without an aerial.
There was no balcony too high for me. If I could watch a Mickey Mouse with thee, way back in 1939 AD.
Memories,
memories.
Ah, Jeanette, remember jitterbugs, my friends, and two world's fairs.
One Orson Welles, two Thanksgivings, and three little fishes.
Kaiser's orchestra is doing the singing there. Harry Babbitt and Ginny Sims. Ginny Sims, Virginia Sims, actually. She sung with some of the greats, including people like Dinah Shore, Peggy Lee, Ella Fitzgerald, Joe Stafford, and Harry Babbitt didn't do too badly either. Hope you enjoyed that. That was called Way Back in 1939 AD. And I believe that was written by Johnny Mercer and Hoagie Carmichael. I'm not totally sure on that, but I believe I'm correct in that. And you know what? If I'm not, well, it's just you and me. We won't worry about it. Okay, Bruce, good morning to you. Bruce is in Portsmouth, and he says, how about Lita Rosa for Beagle's Big Three? Sounds good to me, and Bruce chose them.
Carousel, feeling like a kid, remembering oh so well the crazy things we did. We on a carousel, like I used to do, remembering oh so well when life and love were. Round I go like the carousel, searching for something. Is it love? Who can tell? Someday I'll find my love. Who will cast the spell? Who'll come and ride with me on a carousel? Round I go like the
can
Johnny so long at the fair. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny so long at the fair. He promised to buy me a bunch of blue ribbons. He promised to buy me a bunch of blue ribbons. He promised to buy me a bunch of blue ribbons to tie up my bonnie brown hair. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny so long at the fair. A garland of lilies, a garland of roses, a little straw hat to set off the blue ribbons that tie up my bonny brown hair. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny so long at the fair. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Dear, 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 what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny so long at the fair. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny so long at the fair. If only you trust in me. Come to me when things go wrong. Cling to me and I'll be strong. We can get along. If only you trust in me. While there's a moon on high, while there's a bird to fly, while there's a you and I, you can be sure you.
lie. While there's a you and I, you can be sure I love you. Stand beside me all the while. Face the future with a smile. Trust in me, and I'll be worthy of you.
Beautiful, wasn't it, Kate? Lisa Rota there, and three songs as chosen by Bruce in Portsmouth. Thank you so much for that, Bruce. We had Me on a Carousel, Oh Dear, What Can the Matter Be, and Trust in Me. Three great songs chosen by Bruce. So thank you so much for that, Bruce. Really did enjoy them. Especially Oh Dear, What Can the Matter Be. Join along with that, no end. Thank you, Bruce. And if you would like to be the purveyor of next week's Beagle's Big Three, just drop me a line. Email, preferably, please, roy@angelradio.uk. Let me know the artist you would like, and also, of course, the songs, if you want to choose them. But if you would rather me choose them, I'm happy to do that as well. And if you don't have access to email, you can, of course, just give the office a call, 0800-014-1955, and ask them to pass a message on to me, and they will do that. Okay, time now for Tell Me a Story, and this week it's a short love story read by Kate O'Mara, and it is called That Friday Feeling.
That Friday Feeling by Stella Whitelaw, read by Kate O'Mara.
Friday the 13th seemed a good day on which to give in her notice. People expected the unexpected to happen. Losing letters, tripping over the cat, missing buses. Helen's departure would be just one more irritating occurrence. "Morning, miss," said the cheerful doorman. "My last," said Helen, not explaining. Helen went into the office, took off her coat and the cover from her typewriter for the last time. She would not work out her notice. She would just up and leave. She made some coffee and decided to clear out her desk. "Would you come in, please, Helen, with your book?" Roger's voice came over the intercom, deep, treacly, and it still had the power to make her heart quicken. But not for much longer. Not after today. Helen did not check her appearance in the mirror. Why bother? It did not matter how she looked anymore. She could go in wearing a brown paper bag on her head and he probably wouldn't notice. He swiveled round in his chair, long grey-clad legs crossed, fingers steepled. His eyes were cold, righteous, fixed on a spot a few inches past her left shoulder. "I'd like to get this lot into your notebook before I go home to Birmingham after lunch," he said, shuffling through some papers. "Let's get started." "All right," said Helen, sitting in the opposite chair. He shouldn't wear the same clothes. It was not fair. Her fingers still remembered how she had unknotted that pale blue silk tie with trembling fingers, hung that expensive jacket over a chair as if to impress him with wifely care. She had not expected to be a one afternoon stand. Roger's pursuit had been long and relentless, from the careless brushing of fingers as he handed her a letter to the first tentative kiss in a taxi, riding on expenses. She supposed it was the chase he enjoyed, not the capture. Helen's mouth tightened as her pen scrawled unreadable pitmans all over the page. She did a lot of short forms and contractions for practice. She had no intention of ever typing it up. Capture. She had been only too willing to be caught. A ready moth to the flame, reduced by that time to an adoring slave by his masterly handling. He kissed beautifully, long, lingering kisses that made her feel as if she was drifting in a warm Caribbean sea, gentle waves lapping on her bare back. The office became a private paradise for the two of them. She bought flowers, polished his desk, spent most of her salary on flattering clothes, was as lost as a kitten when he went away on business, pining and counting the hours till his return. "You're a fool," said Miranda as they repaired their faces at lunchtime. Helen had not said much, but her friend knew. "He's just playing with you. He's very much married, and he's got his eye on promotion. He's not going to take you along with him when he moves upstairs." "I don't care," Helen said, seeing how her reflection glowed in the mirror, her eyes sparkling. "I'm in love with him. He's wonderful." "Tosh," said Miranda. "He's a calculating bastard." Helen did not believe Miranda. Her friend didn't know how heady it was to work with Roger. He was a power machine, motivated by ambition, and Helen loved being part of his dynamic schemes. It was so flattering. He confided in her, depended on her support, told her she was beautiful, always took her to lunch on Fridays, eating on expenses, took time choosing the wine. She ought to have known that behind his handsome, arrogant, clean-shaven face was a mean heart, a man who didn't spend his own money. He rarely put his hand in his pocket, literally. He had a sartorial obsession with the cut of his clothes. What had he put her down as when he lunched her on Fridays? A trading transaction? The company paid towards his Riverside flat, too. He'd been moved from the Midlands office and power-talked the board into assisting with his London accommodation, the same way as he talked Helen into his bed. By the time that afternoon arrived, she was a puppet in his hands. She would have followed him anywhere, done anything, and found herself melting without protest as his fingers unfastened her blouse, brushed the rising curves of her breasts. Helen almost fainted with the intenseness of her feelings as he steered her towards the turned-down, non-iron sheets. But it was all over in minutes. Helen lay in a bewildered haze, body pulsing. Roger had not waited for her. Already he had rolled away and was padding into the bathroom, his naked back tanned from holidays she had not shared. Perhaps next time it would be different, she consoled herself, aching, staring up at the ceiling, his ceiling, looking at the swirling, brush-stroked pattern. The first time was always difficult, clumsy, awkward. But another voice inside had demanded, why should it be so? The first time could be caring, tender, funny, even if not technically perfect. The window was open, and a chill breeze made her pull the sheets over her bare shoulders. Perhaps he was bringing her a towel, a cup of tea. That was it. He was making tea in his tiny kitchen. Perhaps he would come back, eyes glowing and smiling, and they'd start all over again, and this time it would be wonderful. He returned, buttoning up a freshly laundered shirt. "I've got a meeting at 3:30, he said briskly. "Yes, of course," said Helen, who'd been hoping he'd cancel it. Her clothes were all over the floor. He'd removed them fast enough. Now, apparently, he could not get rid of her fast enough. He did not help her dress. She had to scramble to find her abandoned bra, panties, rolled up tights on her own. The first seeds of doubt entered her mind. This wasn't how it should be. Where was the romance? What had she done, and for what? For nothing, it seemed. Roger's face was set as he hailed a taxi in the street. On expenses? And they went back to the office. They did not speak. Silence hung like a shroud. Helen was still elated, but tearful. The next time would be all right, she promised herself. Roger was just upset. She spent the weekend madly slimming, pampering her face, hair, nails, watching the slow clock till Monday morning. It had been the shock, she explained to herself. Adultery the first time round must be a shock for a man like Roger. On Monday morning, he was not there. He'd been called away north to a meeting that had suddenly materialized out of the air. Helen felt icy cold all over, despite the central heating, as if she had her own private corridor of weather. She could not concentrate on her work, was fit for nothing beyond answering the phone and taking pointless messages. "He's gone away," said Helen in a low voice, "and he didn't tell me." "Cheer up," said Miranda, looking across to Helen's pale face in the mirror. "Lover boy will be back soon, panting for another fumble." "He doesn't fumble," said Helen, ignoring an inner honesty. "You don't understand." "That's the trouble. I do understand," said Miranda. "Watch out, my girl. You're going to land very hard." By Friday, Helen knew she had landed, and the earth was a rock-hard, uncompromising, silent, screaming abyss. Roger had returned on the Wednesday, frigid-faced, dictating reports with machine-gun rapidity. No coffee, no kisses, not even a friendly hello. Helen felt like an insect, unclean, like something crawling from under a stone. "Sorry I can't make lunch today," he said about noon that Friday. "I've some clients. Something's cropped up." "That's fine," said Helen brightly. "Things do crop up, don't they?" "Don't let him see," she told herself as she slowly went out of her mind. She did not eat. She lost half a stone. Her skin became sallow. The gloss faded from her hair. Where had she gone wrong? She wept to herself at night. Because once she said yes after months of saying no. She still loved him. But even that was slowly dying, starved by his indifference and rejection. A few weeks later, on Friday the 13th, she went to the personnel department and handed in her notice. The personnel officer said that they would be sorry to see her go. She was an excellent secretary. Roger would miss her, etc., etc. "No time for our usual Friday lunch," she said flippantly at noon, getting it in first. She closed her notebook of unintelligible outlines, recapped her pen. No, Roger said, embarrassed, not looking at her. "I'm due home. I've got, fresh pastures?" She knew he had been seeing the new receptionist on the fifth floor. She'd caught them together in the lift, pulling apart swiftly as the doors opened. "Would you sign these internal memos, please?" said Helen, handing him a sheaf. "You forgot to sign them yesterday." He scribbled his name on them, still without looking. Helen did no work that day, but she did have a very busy afternoon. When she had made sure Roger had gone, she emptied the filing cabinets in both offices and put everything through the shredder in the corridor. She also shredded the contents of his desk, his appointments diary, the framed certificate of merit off the wall, the regional sales charts, address book, phone numbers, even the photo of his wife in the Midlands, poor woman. The waste bins outside filled up with mountains of shredded paper, overflowing onto the floor like lava. "Spring cleaning?" asked Miranda, sailing by with a pile of files. "Something like that." Helen surveyed Roger's empty and deserted office, a barren paradise. She knew it was a pathetic gesture, but it made her feel better. He'd talk his way out of any trouble upstairs, say her work had deteriorated, that she'd become unhinged. But word would get around. Miranda would see to that. She wrote out a cheque to her employers and addressed it to the chief accountant, marking it a repayment of her half of those Friday lunches that Roger had claimed on expenses. Her step lightened as she left the building, shaking off that Friday feeling once and for all. She'd arranged for the maintenance men to move in over the weekend. They were going to paint every inch of his office black. Roger had signed the memo, but he might have trouble talking himself out of that one with upstairs. "You look very happy, miss," said the doorman as Helen went out into the late sunshine. "I think I am," said Helen, giving him a special smile. Who knows what Monday will bring?
kissed me, whispered my name.
Where are you now?
And Where Are You Now? And before that, Tell Me a Story this week was a short love story read by Kate O'Mara, and it was called That Friday Feeling. And we'll have another story for you around about the same time next week. You are listening to Beagley at Night here on Angel Radio at 98.6 in Havant and Portsmouth and Gosport and other areas in that general direction. We're also on various DAB multiplexes throughout the country and, of course, around the world on the internet. And you can get details of DAB and internet how-tos at angelradio.co.uk. Time now for a little bit of posh, and it is a request indeed, and I'm going to find it here in my email, which I seem to have... No, I found it. Here we go. Let's see. It's from Jessie up there in California, up in Scotland, and she says, I hope you enjoyed your visit to Britain and maybe saw Son of Scotland on your travels. Didn't quite get up that far, actually, Jessie, but next time, not only will I get up to Scotland, I'm going to come and see you. Well, I need a good cup of tea, right? But I did have a nice trip. Jessie, thank you very much. And I'm glad to hear that you're getting over your little car conundrum, which was very nasty, but I'm glad that that's getting behind you. Anyway, Jessie says in her email, for your bit of posh, can you maybe find Land of the Mountain and the Flood, written by Hamish McCann, and play it for me. For you, Jessie, I can absolutely do that. She says my recording of it is by the Scottish National Orchestra, conducted by Sir Alexander Gibson. So I think you should probably recognize this. Jessie, for you. Thank you. from the Scottish National Orchestra, conducted by Sir Alexander Gibson, and that was The Land of the Mountain and the Flood, as requested by Jesse up there in California, in Scotland. Thank you, Jesse. Wasn't that stirring? I hope I got the levels right on that. It was one of those pieces of music that went quiet and loud and quiet and loud, and I don't just sit here doing nothing when the music's on, you know. I have to up and lower the levels and stuff, and with being now three quarters deaf, it's not as easy as it used to be, but hopefully I got it close enough. And as Jesse pointed out to me in her email, it used to be the theme tune to something called Sutherland's Law, if you remember that, with that great actor Ian Cuthbertson. And I think it was, what, early 70s, 72, 73, I think. And they went on for a couple of years. It was very good. I think that's where he was the procurator fiscal, if memory serves me correctly, and it was very good series indeed. So Jesse, thank you for all of those memories, and indeed thank you for your email. It's going to it's going to take me a couple of days to digest it, but I will get back to you of that, I promise. Are you listening to Beagle at Night with me, RB? And let's see, we're late already for Doris Day. I'm really looking forward to the second of the three songs, because it's one of my favourite songs, and I've never heard it sung by anybody else. So the fact that Doris is going to do it, I'm really looking forward to. But first, she's speaking to the stars. Here's Doris Day and Leith Stevens and his orchestra in Day at Night.
I speak to the stars in a sky full of wonder, in a world full of magic. It may be they can hear what my heart is thinking out.
We know what you're
thinking. I speak to the stars and I ask them to tell me, am I making a blunder? Is this just an illusion, or is it really love? Do I make too much of the promise in a stranger's eyes? What will happen when the magic dies? Am I riding for a fall? I speak to the stars and I wait for an answer. Little stars, won't you tell me? But they don't seem to hear as they twinkle up above. So I turn from them and speak to my heart, and my heart tells me I'm in. I'm in love. will not always say what you would have him say. But now and then he'll say something wonderful, the thoughtless things he'll do will hurt and worry you. Then all at once he'll do something wonderful. He has a thousand dreams that won't come true. You know that he believes in them, and that's enough for you. You always go along, defend him when he's wrong, and tell him when he's strong. He is wonderful. He'll always need your love, and so he'll get your love. A man who so and so. These are little things, ordinary things, every girl should know. The way you hold his hand should make him understand that anywhere he leads you, you will go. These are little things, ordinary things, every girl should know. And when he's blue, you when he's gay, oh, you be gay. And if it's right or wrong, you'll always get along that way. When he says, don't tell him that you knew it long ago. These are little things, such important things, every girl should know. These are little things, such important things. Every girl should know.
We started out with I Speak to the Stars from Lucky Me, and we ended with Every Girl Should Know, and in the middle we had Something Wonderful, and it truly was wonderful. I think that might be, for me, the best song that Rodgers and Hammerstein ever wrote, and it's just absolutely beautiful, and it's sung in the show by Lady Tiang to Leonora Owens, the governess, and sung beautifully in the film by Terry Saunders, and she actually was the understudy for Dorothy Sarnoff, who sung the song in the original Broadway production. It's funny how it all comes around, isn't it? But absolutely beautiful songs. Three wonderful songs there, I thought, from Doris Day. And we'll have some more from her around about the same time next week, give or take a few minutes. Time now to dial up and see what year we're going to be having next. Here we go, one more. Yep.
At the third stroke, the time on Angel Radio will be about 1949.
I let my heart fall into careless hands. Hands that broke my heart in two. You held my dreams like worthless grains of sand. Careless hands don't care when dreams slip through. I brought you joy. Dear, I loved you so, but all that sunshine didn't make the roses grow. If you don't change, someday you'll know the sorrow of careless hands that can't hold.
Like this, it just warms my cockles of my heart, it really does. Careless Hands from 1949, it was with Sammy Kay. Singing was by Don Cornell and the Three Cadets. Can't forget the Cadets, as if we ever would. Now, this next song, I played this, I think it was last week, in the mid-morning show, the live show, on Tuesdays, and I wanted to play it again because I just like it. It's Mickey and Griff. Singing along with Mickey and Griff, and I Want to Stay Here from 1963. Now, after our next song, which is quite short, we're going to be having some comedy, but first of all, I believe this is from Camelot. Chorus of Camelot from the original motion picture. I think next time that comes on television, I'm going to have to watch it. I've only ever seen it once, and I saw it when it first came out. I can remember my mum took me and my sister to see it, and I thought it was the most boring film going. I really did. It seemed like it would never end, and I think just as I thought it was about to end, it turned out to be just the intermission. If memory serves me correctly. But I think age may have improved me. So I think I'd quite like to see that film again next time it comes on television. And It's not one of those you come across very often, but would be very interesting, I think. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Just want to say a quick thank you to DAB Dave, who has supplied pretty much all of the music you've heard in this program. He never ever wants me to mention that he's done this, but he has, and he does it out of the goodness of his heart, and he just does it so well. I think all I've chosen is three songs from Bing Crosby and three songs from Doris Day. Jesse chose the little bit of Posh, and it's sort of, was it Bruce did Beagle's Big Three? It's like I've had to choose six songs out of the 22 that we've played so far. So, Dave, thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it. And I know you don't want the thanks, but just take them with the love that they come from me to you. And, of course, a great big thanks. One day may even get to meet him. Now, that would be fun, wouldn't it? All right, where are we? Well, we're far too late for comedy, but you know what? That's not going to stop us. So this week we've got three bits of comedy for you, starting off with Vic Oliver and Sarah Churchill with Knock Knock, Who's There? And then it'll be the tale of Hector Cramp from Cyril Fletcher, and then we'll be joining Julian and Sandy at the Bonus School of Languages. But first, Knock Knock.
Well, hello, Vic. How are you? Fancy meeting you here.
Well, 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 Jim. How are you? What are you doing these days?
Oh, didn't you hear? I'm on the stage now, making lots of money. I'm a comedian.
You actually mean to tell me you are making people laugh?
Laugh, they're spit in their sides when I tell them stories and jokes.
Oh, please, Jimmy, you must tell me one. I tell you, my wife always complains I can never make her laugh.
Oh, that's easy. Have you heard the new Knock Knock?
Well, I can't say I have.
Well, you see, I say Knock Knock. Then you say, who's there? Then I say, for instance, Izzy. You say, Izzy who? And then I tell a joke.
Gee, that sounds very good. Let's try it.
All right, then, Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Izzy.
Izzy who?
Is it true what they say about Dixie?
See, that is very funny. Here comes my wife now. I must tell her immediately.
I'm sorry, I can't wait, but I'm late as it is. I must go and get my dough money. Cheerio.
Well, so long, Jimmy. I'll see you soon. Thanks ever so much. Oh, Sarah, come here a minute. I've got a grand new game.
All right, what is it?
Listen, Sarah, this is a marvelous new game I just brought over from America.
Well, let's hear it. How does it go?
Well, you see, the game is called Knock Knock.
Sounds to me like a very noisy game.
No, no, not at all. You just say knock, knock. You don't actually knock.
Oh, I see. Like this. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Just me.
No, Sarah, you don't understand. That is the game. When somebody says knocks, you say, who's there?
But, Vic, this sounds very stupid. First you say nobody really knocks, and then you say, who's there? That doesn't make sense.
Ah, but you see, that is just the way the game is played. For instance, I say knock, knock to you.
Knock, knock to you, sir, and many of them.
No, Sarah. When I say knock, knock, you're supposed to answer me, who's there?
Who's where?
No, who's there?
That's what I'd like to know. Who is there?
No, that's the game. You say who's there.
But why don't you say who's there?
All right, then you say knock, knock.
All right. Knock, knock.
Come in. Come in. I don't mean come in. You've got me all mixed up now. I mean, who's there?
Well, is that the whole game? I don't think so very much of it.
But no, that isn't the whole game, Sarah. Listen, do you remember the old story about the fireman who wore red braces? For instance, I ask you, why does a fireman wear red braces? Then you say to me, no, I don't know. Why does a fireman wear red braces? And then I say, to keep his trousers up. You see it now?
Yes, yes, I believe I understand now. All right, knock, knock.
Who's there?
The fireman.
Fireman who?
To keep his trousers up.
To keep his trousers up. What has that got to do with knock, knock?
I don't know. You suggested it yourself. It's your game. I think it's very silly.
It wouldn't be silly if you played the game the way it should be played. Listen, Sarah, I married you for life, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, show some. Look here. I say knock, knock. You say who's there. I say Izzy. You say Izzy who. And then I'll tell the answer. Do you see it now?
Oh, now let me get that straight. You say knock, knock.
Right.
I say who's there.
That's right.
You say Izzy.
Correct.
I say Izzy who.
Okay.
And you tell me the answer.
Now you've got it. Now you've got it. All right. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Izzy.
Which Izzy?
No, not no, which no. Izzy. Izzy which? I mean, not Izzy who. You say Izzy who.
Oh, a Chinaman.
Izzy who, a Chinaman. You just say Izzy who.
Oh, well, let's try it once again.
All right, for the last time, I implore you, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Izzy.
Izzy who?
What did you say?
I said Izzy who.
So you did. So you did. Izzy who. Izzy who. My God, now I forgot the answer.
Now I want you to picture the Pacific Ocean, do you see? Yes, those cords were rather binding. Now, thousands of fathoms down on the ocean bed, with millions of cubic tons of water, and in one dark corner of the ocean bed are two oysters. And one says to the other, "Darling, I think I'm going to have a pearl." Yes, now I must tell you of a friend of mine who was a lunatic. And he had a sudden desire to write a book. So he called the water bloke and said, "Do give me the necessary paper and typewriter because I want to write a book." And the water brought the paper and the typewriter and the lunatic began to write. And he wrote and wrote and wrote. And after about the 999th page, the water got rather interested and went up to him and said, "Well, lunatic, what have you written?" And my friend the lunatic said, "Well, this is what I've written." And he held up a whole sheaf of pages, do you see, and began to read. The cowboy jumped onto the horse and said, "Gee up, gee 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 up," and so on for 999 pages. And the water bloke said, "Well, surely won't your readers get rather bored with this gee up, gee up, gee up business?" And my friend the lunatic said, "Well, yes, I suppose they will, but how was I to know the damn horse wouldn't move off?" Do you see? Another odd ode. This is the tale of Hector Cramp, who tried to join a nudist camp. Unfortunately, he was tough, and if that wasn't bad enough, bore signs of toughness everywhere. In fact, he was a mass of hair. Hair on his arms, hair on his back, hair on his legs, hair on his feet. In fact, there wasn't anywhere about him that there wasn't hair. And when of clothes he was divested, the headman of the camp suggested, he didn't look a wee bit raw, and looked as well clothed as before, and said, suspicious of a plot, "We don't know if you're nude or not," and called to the head gardener, "Jim, run the lawnmower over him." So on the ground they laid poor Cramp, although the grass was frightfully damp, and the head gardener, nothing loath, tried to remove poor Hector's growth. But Hector's hair was tough as wire and nearly set the mower on fire. With friction it became red hot, and the headman soon upon the spot said, "Upon my life, we'll have to go and fetch a scythe." But when with scythe they did appear, Hector was filled with a terrible fear and said, "No, no, you never shall. I'm not a harvest festival."
Just lately I've been thinking about holidays, and I spotted an advertisement in my copy of the Corslet and Cummerbund Enquirer, which I buy for the I Spy section. Anyway, the advert read, "Parlez-vous français? The Bonner School of Languages will teach you all you need to know." So, next morning I went round to their address in Chelsea. Hello, anybody there?
Oh, hello, je suis Julien, cet homme ici est mon ami Sand.
Oh, hello!
Bonjour, Françoise, and souvez la piste. How bonner, thank you. Bonne about your jolly old eek encore.
Yes, so you're a French teacher.
Mm. Oh, oui, oui.
Oui. Our motto, you're never alone on a foreign strand with a language taught by Jules and Say.
Nice. Now, how can we help you, visage de coeur?
That's French for art face.
For a start, I'd like to brush up my Greek.
Well, don't let us stop you if it gives you any pleasure.
The Greek language.
Oh, well. We're not too hot on the Greek.
Not too hot.
No. To be honest, we don't know our alpha from our omega. All he knows is shish kebab, and all I know is the Acropolis.
By moonlight.
I...
Yes, he had an experience up the Acropolis. Oh. Didn't you, Jewel? Go on, Jewel.
I'd rather not speak of it.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. He could tell you things, Mr. Owen, that make Lawrence Darrell sound like Patience Strong. By a corner.
Are you by any chance referring to Lawrence Durrell's tongue?
I never repeat gossip.
Tongue. Tunk is the title of Lawrence Durrell's latest novel. It's not a vulgar slang expression. I just put that in case the Director General was listening. Mm. Now, where were we?
At the Acropolis.
Frankly, we're not dab hands at your Greek.
Well, what do you specialise in?
Well, we concentrate more on the modern languages, French, Italian, Spanish. Then, of course, we do your various Chinese dialects, Cantonese, Cochinese, Pekingese.
Pekingese? How does that sound?
Would you believe woof woof?
And then, of course, we specialise in English for your actual foreign visitor.
Yes, we're working on an old Sikh now.
Yes, Ram Singh. Ram Singh. Now, this is interesting, Mr. He didn't speak a word when
not
he came to us. Now, did he,
not
Jewel?
Not a word.
But you should hear him now. Fetch him out the cubicle, Jewel. Go on, fetch him out. Introduce him to Mr. Orne.
Mr. Ram Singh.
Ram Singh.
Like come and meet a friend.
Come on, dear. Come here, dear. This is Mr. Orne.
Well, how do you do?
Hello, Mr. Horndacky. How bono de vada, you dolly old eek.
Yes, very good. He's got all the palari, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a sort of jewel of the Orient.
Mr. Ram Singh, back to the cubicle, ducky.
Cubicle?
Yes, yes, that's our method. Soundproof cubicle and headphone. We call it Polari phone.
Polari phone. Our method. Jewel has devoted his life to perfecting that method, haven't you, Jewel?
Yes, I have.
Tell him how you started.
I have.
Tell him how you started.
Well, on the method.
Yes, go on.
I don't like. Well, I find I'm nervous with strangers.
Well, I'm not strange.
Oh, get him! Now, go on, Jewel. Tell him how it all started. Tell him.
Well, I had this friend.
Friend?
Yeah. in the Merchant Navy. And every time he came into port, he brought me something.
Brought him something?
Yes.
Every time he came into port?
Yes. Like a ukulele or a ship in a bottle.
He was generosity itself, that boy. Yes, lovely. Yes. Jock, wasn't it? Jock.
Friend of Gord.
Friend of Gord. Gord introduced. Used to make these ships in bottles himself, didn't he,
Jewel? Yes, all by himself.
Oh, you'd be amazed what Jock could do with a bit of wood in a bottle.
Yes, that's one of his on the mantelpiece.
On the mantelpiece.
Yeah, well, I can see that. I can see the bottle, but there's nothing in it.
No, it's the Marie Celeste. So when he rode up, one leave, he brought me a parrot.
And this parrot could speak 17 languages.
Sort of polyglot.
Yeah. I thought if a dumb beastie could do it, so could I.
And that's how it started. And today, Jewel can say, Polly wants a cracker in every language in the world.
Yes,
yes. Every language
yes.
in the world.
So we started this school up.
Well, what a fascinating story, he said, lying in his teeth.
So what language would you like to learn, Mr. Orne?
Well, I think perhaps Spanish.
Oh, fabulosa. Yes, all right. Well, we'll start you off with lesson one. Yeah, thank you. Yes. Now, here's a list of Spanish phrases and what they mean in English. You learn these for the start.
Yes, they're useful phrases, like for the traveller.
I see. Right. Now, what's this? Good morning, good afternoon, good night, hello, I cannot speak Spanish. Please write it down. I am lost. This man is pestering me. Catch a policeman. I have lost my handbag. I've lost my handbag? I thought you said these were useful phrases for the traveller. Now, what use is that to me?
Well, when we was in Spain, we found it very useful.
Yes, I'm sure. In Portuguese, Polly wants a cracker would be Polly quer um biscoito. In German, I think it would be, you know what, I can't even remember. Polly will einen cracker. There you go. That's as good as I'm going to get. We heard from Vic Oliver and Sarah Churchill, who I think were married at one point, with Knock Knock, Who's There? And then we had Cyril Fletcher with the tale of Hector Cramp, a comedy ode. And then finally, Julian Sandy, Julian being Hugh Paddock, Julian being Kenneth Williams, and Sandy being Hugh Paddock, and the Bonus School of Languages, as discussed by the great Kenneth Horn. And we'll have some more comedy for you around about the same time next week, right here on Angel Radio.
We wake you up in the morning, we keep you on the go.
We're your company in the evening and at night when the lights are low.
Angel Radio, old-fashioned quality.
I lost my true lover from a courting too slow.
For courting's a pleasure and parting is grief.
And a false-hearted lover is worse than a thief. A thief will just rob you.
A thief will just rob you.
And take what you say.
And take what you say.
But a false-hearted lover.
But a false-hearted lover.
Will lead you to your grave.
Will lead you to the grave.
And the grave will decay you.
And the grave will decay.
And turn you to dust.
And turn you to dust.
Not one girl in 50.
Not one girl in 50.
That a poor boy can trust.
That a poor boy can trust.
They'll hug you and kiss you.
They'll hug you and kiss you.
And tell you more lies.
And tell you more lies.
And the cross ties on the railroad.
And cross ties on a railroad.
Or the stars in the sky.
Or stars in the sky.
All you maidens, and listen to me. Never place your affections on a green willow tree.
The leaves, they will wither.
The leaves, they will wither.
The roots, they will die.
The roots, they will die.
You'll all be forsaken.
You'll all be forsaken.
Never know why.
And never know why.
I think that was from 1951. That was Burl Ives and the orchestra and chorus of Percy Faith. Always a good orchestrator was dear old Perse, and that was On Top of Old Smoky. From 1955, we go back, let's see, 11 years? Yes, to 1944. Here are the Merrimacks with their orchestra and Pretty Kitty Blue Eyes.
When she walks along on the street, fellows shout, here, pretty kitty, blue eyes. You can hear them shouting each time she goes out, here, pretty kitty, blue eyes. But she looks at no boy, she's lonely in New York, 'cause she loves a dull boy named Johnny O'Rourke. That's why she'll never hear anyone till he'll shout, I'm here, pretty kitty, blue eyes.
Her eyes are like the blue skies of Erin. Her beauty is something quite daring.
There's no one as pretty as Kitty. She's got the whole town staring.
Here,
pretty kitty blue eyes. Here, pretty kitty blue eyes.
But she goes with no boy, she's got her memories. Cause she loves a doughboy who's now overseas.
Walks along on the street, fellows shout, here, pretty kitty, blue eyes. You can hear them shouting each time she goes out, here, pretty kitty, blue eyes. But she looks at no boy, she's lonely in New York, cause she loves a doughboy named Johnny O'Rourke. That's why she'll never hear anyone till he'll shout, I'm here, pretty kitty, my pretty kitty, oh, you're so pretty kitty, pretty kitty, pretty kitty, pretty kitty blue eyes.
Tout le bleu pastel d'un tango qui chante pour nous deux. Donne-moi ton cœur, donne-moi ta vie. Revivons le bonheur du jour où je t'ai suivi. Je n'entends plus rien. Ce chant là-bas et ce levant musicien où ton cœur qui bat, je suis si bien entre tes bras. Mais pourquoi songer, mais pourquoi savoir que c'est un rêve léger flottant dans l'indigo du soir.
Même s'il n'est qu'un fort espoir
flottant dans l'indigo du soir. Qu'on danse jour à jour. Des reflets changeants sont dans tes cheveux. Une étoile d'argent emporte en passant mes voeux. Je n'entends plus rien que ce chant là-bas et ce levant musique. Où mon cœur qui bat, je suis si bien entre tes bras. Donne-moi tes nuits, donne-moi tes jours. Faisons de l'heureux qui fuit un rêve qui vivra toujours. Même s'il n'est qu'un fol espoir flottant dans l'indigo du soir.
From Pretty Kitty Blue Eyes from the Murray Max to Blue Tango from Patrice et Mario, although shouldn't have been Le Tango Bleu, I'm just asking. This is Kenneth McCullough right now.
Country girl, country girl, I beheld her in meadowland, mowing and reaping
and singing a refrain. Oh, what a melancholy strain! The valley echoed with a ring. No nightingale could ever sing so plaintively as the country girl. I was spellbound and curious. Why such a sad song? Perhaps love passed her by. No hopeful rainbow in the sky. Maybe she held a memory dear, a happiness of yesteryear. In solitude cried the country girl. Travel on, sadness befell me, a sorrow filled my heart, a longing never to depart. The music in my soul I bore, long after it was heard no more.
Kenneth McKellar and the Country Girl, orchestrated by Bob Sharples, bless him, and that was from 1966. And that's it. I leave you with Burt Camford and Pete Fountain, and I'll be back same time next week. May I be the first to wish you a very good morning.